listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And hello and welcome to Spirit of Life for Wednesday, February 10th, 2016. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Good to be here.
We'd like to welcome all those who are tuning into the live broadcast, as well as those listening to the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly program, we also have several other educational programs. EmpoweredRecovery.com offers help for the friends and family of alcoholics and addicts. Paranexus.org is an association of anomalous researchers. MetaphysicsInstitute.org offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysical areas such as metaphysical science, spiritual counseling, life coaching, healing, hypnosis, paranormal, and other areas. And Thomas Francis University at tfuniversity.org offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees. Now, as we have been doing the past few weeks, we've been taking one of our principles of belief and expanding on a little bit. And this week, I believe we're up to number 5. And the principle of belief number 5 reads this way. It says, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. So if you think about this, metaphysical humanism obviously is a humanistic type of belief system, spiritual belief system. It is human-centered, not God-centered. So, you know, metaphysical humanism doesn't believe in God, as probably most of us have grown up and learned about over the years. We are pantheistic in nature, meaning we see the divinity in all living things, that spark of life. This also means that for all intents and purposes, we are God. You know, now this is not a narcissistic, egotistic thing. It's just that we are a human-centered religion, belief system. It's what we do. We empower the individual. Therefore, rather than tell you that you're imperfect, we're going to tell you that you are perfect just the way you are, because you are a perfect representation of all the choices and decisions and things that you've done in your life that have brought you to this very moment. Now, does that mean that we don't make mistakes? Well, of course not. It means that we learn from our mistakes, but we are perfect. We don't denigrate the individual. So we don't look for anything outside of ourselves to complete us. That's why one of our principles of belief involves self-completeness, meaning we complete us. We have everything we need within us to accomplish anything we want, and we seek our own counsel, as we've talked about in previous weeks. Anything you'd like to add, Dr. Hunter?
Well, yes, because as we would do every week, pick out a card from our inner oracle self-discovery cards. The card for tonight is reinvention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's complementary to what you were talking about. Now, that's what I was thinking of. And I'd like to read it, actually. It's number 17 in the existential suit. Reinvention. Nothing is more powerful or transformative than self-reinvention, resulting in a personal identity foundation shift. Far-reaching and profound, such a personal reinvention shifts the foundation of your self-concept from external to internal, which, in turn, is vital to your future success and happiness. Re-examine your core values, ensuring they are healthy. Answer these questions. What do I call a good day, and what else in my life should be reinvented? Now, most people are raised with the idea that God is an absolute, you know, like these kinds of notions. And I, you know, as at a young age myself, I questioned a lot of things, but I think I had a problem with authority myself.
Now we figured out.
You know, I think that was part of my problem. But, you know, when you talk about what kind of an organization we are, most people don't know that there's an alternative to believing in a God, which is an interesting concept when you consider, because even myself, as I, in my young years, went on my own journey of, well, what is God? You know, what is that notion of, if it's not Christianity in the Bible, then what religion could it be? Where is the answer? Where is a more sensible kind of answer? And so I did. I spent a considerable amount of time reading about lots of religions. And so in my brain, as I was working through things, I thought, you know, there's a thread that is very similar in all of these religions. And so that's just my, you know, elemental deduction, you know, putting on my little spy hat. And it was just love. That's essentially what everyone was looking for, I think. And so then it was going about the business of reinventing. Well, it took me years to find out that there was such a thing as a pantheistic kind of belief, meaning that, geez, the universe and God is in all of nature. It exists everywhere. I mean, this whole, you know, life force is that so-called God energy. And so, of course, I refused to use that word God for a great number of years because I found it kind of offensive. And then I made peace with it. So there are these, you know, phases that we all go through that are reinventing ourselves. You know, it's like making peace with, changing our mind and our belief systems. And so I think that, you know, it's a really great topic. You know, which leads me, I'd like to segue into...
Before you do that, I want to finish up on this principle number five.
Oh, sorry. Yes, absolutely.
And I would just like to say that this reinvention card or concept of reinvention is something that, you know, we probably ought to be doing continually through life and to some degree. You know, we learn something, well, it's kind of a reinvention of sorts. We learn and we change. But on this principle of belief, that's another area that we can potentially reinvent ourselves. Rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Because at some point in our life, we have to come face to face with, well, with some of the realities of things. When you take a closer look at what some of these religions teach, it's very reprehensible. I mean, the God featured in the Bible, at least, committed acts that even humans, his supposed creation, find morally reprehensible and would never do. In fact, we have laws against things like genocide. And so we have an opportunity to really start thinking critically about what we've been spoon-fed all of our lives. And that's why metaphysical humanism takes more of a pantheistic approach. That is, that this God energy, as Dr. Hunter just mentioned, is kind of in everything. It's in us. It's in everything. It's life. It's consciousness. And so technically speaking, metaphysical humanism is atheistic in nature. Now, when it comes to the question of how did we get here, were we created, you know, where did we come from, we're agnostic because we have no clue. And nobody does, you know, and so we have to take that approach because we're not going to just definitively say, oh, no, there is no creator. We don't know that. It could be just not the one that we've been spoon-fed all our lives. And I'll end it on one other point here. As we reinvent ourselves, be careful of fundamentalist religionists and be careful of fundamentalist atheists. There are two extremes here. We need to be open-minded but reasonable and take, you know, try to find the answers we can to the extent we can and try to formulate a belief on that. And with that in mind, I'd like to segue, I hope this is where you were going, into an email that I received.
Yep, exactly.
A few days ago from Dr. Norman Wilson, and he poses a great question. And I'll just read the question. He says, I just finished reading Newberg's Why We Believe What We Believe. In it, he raised this question. That was a book, by the way. He raised this question, quote, why do we build abstract systems of unproved beliefs? Unquote. He answered, quote, the simple answer is that we have no choice but to believe, unquote. Dr. Wilson's question is, if Newberg is correct, that is, if we have no choice, then we have no free will. What's your take? And so I'd like to comment on that because I think it's a good question. And so I'll reiterate the question. It's based on this, why do we build abstract systems of unproved beliefs? And according to Newberg in his book, the simple answer is that we have no choice but to believe. Now, this is something I discuss in our paranormal courses at IMHS, metaphysicsinstitute.org, and at Thomas Francis University, tfuniversity.org, in the paranormal courses. I believe, there we go, that it's entirely possible to have no position on something. When we have no evidence one way or another, we can have no particular position on something, therefore no belief in a particular thing one way or another. And I love the line from Chad, oh, I can't think of his last name. He's an author on cryptozoology. He makes an excellent point. I know his last name. I just can't recall it right now. But he makes a great point that belief and disbelief are two sides of the same coin. You can't disbelieve in something without automatically believing in something different. Usually it's opposite. However, when it comes to belief and disbelief, I believe we can have no position. And that's what I teach whenever we're doing anything like paranormal investigations or even metaphysics. You know, sometimes we don't have enough evidence one way or another. We can speculate, but we can also maintain a neutral type position. So, my answer is that we do have a choice whether we believe or not. Now, if we're going to take it to the next level and say, well, gee, isn't that what you believe? Well, then I suppose we have no choice. But with all intents and purposes, in a reasonable way, we can have a neutral position on something. And so I personally disagree that with the concept or with the what he posits there is that we have no choice but to believe. Dr. Hunter, any comments?
Well, honestly, I think it's relative to what stage you're at in life, to be honest. I mean, the children believe what they're given. And although, like I said, I had a little issue with authority myself. Generally speaking, when you're taught to call a refrigerator a fridge or, you know, a microwave or a bed, we believe that. We believe that that's what they're called, and we don't question it. When we're told that the government has our best interests at heart and we can all vote and blah, 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 we believe that, you know, and we continue to believe basically the social structure as a reality. And until you question that reality, and that's the key, really, is until you question that reality and you start to put other kinds of little blips on the radar screen together, you believe that that's just the way it is. You know, so when it comes to a matter of religion, that being a more abstract, but I think governments are abstract too, you see. So again, how far do you take it? So I think that the free will is in our ability to question, in our ability to be creative, in our abilities to exercise our intelligence to some degree that suits us, or at least suits our reality at the moment. You know, I happen to believe in reincarnation as a possibility, but I'm also open-minded that it's, you know, there's many dimensions of space-time. But there are those who say that there is no such thing as quantum physics. So it kind of leaves us in a conundrum about, well, what do I believe? Well, I believe what I believe based on my own experiences and the way my brain works and my own, you know, my own reality, so to speak. But staying open-minded, as you've said, Dr. Kelly, it's very difficult to raise children to be open-minded and question when at the same time you're trying to teach them a reality. So it's like
and to respect authority.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. So you better come up with something logical and sensible, because you can't tell them that they have a choice, about what to wear today. At the same time, telling them that they have no choice but to sit in that desk for 6 or 7 hours.
Well, and that's where critical thinking comes into play too. Is that and parameters. In fact, one of the best examples or illustrations, analogies, I guess is more accurate, for free will that I've heard is that we do have free will provided it's on the menu. I can't go fly like Superman because that ain't on the menu.
Yeah.
And so a lot of free will opponents say, well, you don't have free will. And that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's not reasonable. You know, there are always parameters, even what kid's going to wear to school, right? You can say, well, you can wear anything you want. And, you know, some kids are going to go to school wearing something they ought not wear because there are parameters involved. And so we have to keep those in mind. It's not on the menu or shouldn't be on the menu. And so as long as it's on the menu, we can order it. We can do that. So there's some...
Yeah, I agree. At the same time, if I say, well, I think that the whole tax structure is stupid, it's not on the menu not to pay. You know, there's going to be consequences. You know, there's an equal and opposite reaction to everything that we choose. So when you, this leads me to say that when you start to address or entertain ideas that are outside of your group, let's say, you know, your basic family community and so on, then there's going to be a shift in your reinvention, which again, that's the card we chose to start this off, and reinventing yourself in a way that either continues to fit in where you feel comfort or, you know, eventually taking radical steps to say, you know what, I need to move on. And meet other people who continue to open, you know, have open minds. So there's whatever belief system we have, I think that we have, again, that creative ability to, and that to me is the free will. It, even if it's not on the menu to make a change today or alter what we want to do, we still have the ability to live in our minds to continue to question and
And reassess what we're given. You know, don't just accept it. Whether I say it or Dr. Hunter says it or God says it, you know, question it. Always question everything. You know, and if you've got to make up your own mind on things, that means thinking critically, but it also means keeping your feet on the ground too and not going out into orbit. It's in the popular metaphysics community, it's really easy to go way out into orbit on some of this stuff. And, you know, unless there's a good, reasonable, and logical, defensible basis for a belief, then you gotta let it go. It doesn't mean you can't speculate. It's fun to speculate. But when it comes to what we write or what we put out there in written form or even in talking form, we have to be able to, we have to have a reasonable and defensible basis for that belief. Otherwise, it's still in the gray box. It's still up in the air. We don't know. We can speculate, but we can't put it out there. And we don't want to buy into it lock, stock, and barrel unless there's a good basis for it. And I can't emphasize this enough for people because, you know, folks in the metaphysical field get enough of a bad rap, you know. It's no different than the paranormal or UFO fields. You know, you're all a bunch of nutcases. Well, the fact is that that's not true. Yeah, there's nutcases in every field, folks. Everyone. It's just that in this field, some people are so desperate to believe that they'll believe in anything. And then we'll bring that back now to Dr. Wilson's point, or the point that he mentioned in his email on that was made in this book, that simple answers that we have no choice but to believe. Well, you know, a lot of people believe that they have no choice but to believe. They either got to believe in God or they have to be an atheist. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe you can believe in some other religion too. But the fact is that we don't have to. We can hold out forming a final belief, waiting for additional information or additional data. And it comes in little pieces and little bits, you know?
And well, if I can just throw this in, I knew what I believed. I just didn't know the term, that there was such a term as pantheist.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an abstract concept that I had in my mind, and that it worked better for me, but I couldn't explain it. But people want to work in absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the interesting thing, is that if God exists, then God exists, and I can get about my day knowing that God exists. And I don't want to question it because I have to get about my day.
Right.
You know, and people want that. And the other thing is, most people want to feel important. They want to feel a sense of importance. It's just not comfortable to say, I am thinking about this, and it might take me a week, a month, 10 years to figure it out. It's not comfortable. They want that knowing, they want it absolute, and they want it now so they can get about their day. And we all know that the busyness of the world throws us off of our game, because we do have things to tend to. But
you know,
put it on the back burner.
I grew up with that notion, being taught that notion, that it is natural for human beings to want to worship something outside of themselves. And this was put, you know, by the religion I was in kind of a favorable light. Yes, we have this yearning to look to something greater than ourself and something bigger and you know, like God. And I grew up hearing that and buying into that. And now I say, no. That, in my opinion now, that notion that we have to look to something bigger and greater than ourselves, outside of ourselves, is the mark of a lower form of evolutionary progress. When you evolve and you grow, you outgrow that notion. I don't have to look at something outside of me. There is nothing greater than me. There's nothing greater than you. There's nothing, and you know, and you gotta be careful of these English words, bigger and greater. Well, that could mean, you know, greater than us could mean a bunch of people doing the same thing, but that doesn't mean that it's more important or more significant than us. We are significant. We, as a species, we all are. Everybody is. We are our own God. We are our own guru. We should be, anyway. So don't automatically believe that you've got to look for something outside of you. You don't. You need to look at you. You need to make up your own mind. You need to reinvent who you are and don on core values that make sense, that are healthy. Honesty, honor, integrity, doing the right thing, not harming others, making up your own mind, thinking for yourself, using critical thinking skills. Those are all core values that form who we are. And when we get to this point, that's being complete within yourself. You don't need something outside of you to complete you. And most of the world believes that you do. Well, it's time to outgrow that notion, folks.
Well, and even in varying degrees, you know, you're reminding me of, I have had this tendency in my life to come up with a bunch of questions. So I go out and I do little surveys on people, you know, and I like pick out, 10, 15, 20 people and ask them a bunch of questions. And, in this one little series of questions that I had, again, a number of years ago, was, do you love your life? And the other question was, do you find yourself the most interesting human being you know? Now, to both of those questions, I got such a wide array of answers. It was really fascinating to me. It's, number one, nobody of all the people I talked to loved their life. Well, you know, there's all these others. But the more important question to me is, do you find yourself the most interesting human being you know? One woman, an older lady, had said to me, well, now, Vicki, I think that if you really think that about yourself, you might want to think again. Now, when you get a man and you have a real family, you'll love your life more and it will be more interesting. Jeez, okay. And then there's this other woman who's a bit younger than myself at the time. I asked her the question, do you find yourself the most interesting human being you know? She goes, absolutely not. She said, do you? I said, of course, I'm the only one who lives in here. That's fascinating.
As far as you know.
I think so. And she said, you don't know enough people. But, you know,
they're missing the point.
And they did. They totally missed the point. But for me, it was an even greater study of people that everything was outside the self. And if you had all these things, you would be happier. If you had more stuff, or you had a traditional, like I said, I do have a, this one woman, I told her, I do have a real family. I have kids and we're a family, but a real family, dear. No, well, what? Is this not a real family? But in her mind, her belief system, again, she believed that a real family is a mother, father, children. And I said, well, but even if I met somebody and he came in to be a part of this family, it's not a real family because he's not their biological father. She goes, well, yes, that's true. But,
You see, you're screwed either way.
So this is what I mean by the critical thinking, you know, of just, you know, anyway, it goes on and on. But honestly, right. I love everybody to stop and think about that for a minute. You're the only one who's thinking. You're the only one who's feeling. You're the only one in there. Is that not fascinating? Like, does it not interest you in some way? You got to ask yourself this. How did you come up with that? Why did you have that thought? What were you feeling? And that actually helps you to be more present in the moment, you know, like to feel that here and now is to be aware. Sometimes when somebody says, and somebody said, can you repeat that? And I thought, oh, gee, can I repeat that? Because I wasn't in the moment, you know, because if I'm in the moment, I can repeat it. And so it's, but then I'd find that really interesting about myself too, because I wasn't in that moment. So this is the study of the self and reinventing the self and continually, you know, not accepting that life is out there, because really the only life I know is in here. And how I get about life, the way I see it.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's pull another card.
Actually, I just did. And that card is number 43 in the life skill suit, expediency.
Good one.
Now, and I guess we can see some relevance here, too. Timing is everything. Some things call for expediency. Others require us to slow down. If you have a problem, you can take care of it now, or suffer longer and still take care of it later. It takes courage to face important matters when timing and opportunity avails, and wisdom to know when to slow down to assess the correct actions before acting promptly. For success in anything, do what you should do when you should do it. Now, I know you have a lot to say about that one, Dr. Kelly, because it's that stop start sometimes and that hurry up and go and using that intuition and finding these little guidelines. Well, if it's not working, just stop and take, you know, inventory for a second.
Well, yeah, and expediency is a great thing, and kind of talked about this in recent weeks that, I mean, a lot of things come to mind. You know, I think I talked about this last week. All my life, I've wanted too much too fast. And expediency was a thing. And when I see something I want, I go after it and I make it happen and I get it done. But then there are times when I have to stop and slow down. In fact, one of the things I've had to work on my whole life is just being in the moment, because I'm always looking ahead. I'm always planning ahead. I'm always envisioning what's coming down the pike and where I'm going with it. And that's important. But it's also important to just stop and smell the roses, as they say. And so I do that a lot more. I stop, take an assessment of where I'm at, where I've been, where I'm going to go, but importantly, where I'm at. So there's a lot of ways you can apply this. One of the things that comes to mind is students in our schools. You know, we've got all kinds of students. Some want to go fast, some go slow, and I'm not, there's no judgment here. I don't care, but we get a student down there who wants to go too fast. And so they go so fast that they're not really learning and they're taking the exams. They're not doing so well. And that's a time that you just need to slow down and learn it, because that's the point. You know, the point is not to just get an exam done. The point is to learn material. And if you do that, you'll do really well in the exams. And then a last point that I'll comment on was the problems. You know, this nugget is worth potentially tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars to you. And that is, if you have a problem, you have a choice. You can either take care of the problem now, or you can suffer longer and still take care of the problem later. But either way, you will take care of it eventually or die from the pain. And this is something that we need to have smacked into us a lot. I know I did. We get into a toxic relationship or something like that, and we go with it. We don't really resolve it. We just live with it, and life is miserable. And then at some point, we realize we've got to take care of the problem. And if we would just remember that, if you got a problem, you might as well take care of it now. Because if you wait, you're just going to suffer longer, and you're still going to take care of it later. So why not get rid of that middle section, that suffering longer part, and just deal with it. Take care of it. Get on with it. You know, yes, a lot of times there's fear involved. You don't know. It's fear of the unknown. We don't know where we're going. We don't know how it's going to all end up. It doesn't matter. It's part of your path. It's part of your journey. You will learn. You will gain that experience, and you'll know better next time. So that's all.
Well, you know, and for all the good planning that some people might have, intuition beats them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you got to go on your radar. You got to go on that instinct. You got to go on that other sense that tells you today's the day or right now is the moment. Or, you know, I've known a lot of things that I have little plans to do. Some things I can procrastinate on, like my bookkeeping a little bit. But when it comes to, I know I have these very strategic things that I have to lay out for myself, and I'm not sure when I'm going to do them. I'll just get a moment and I'll say, oh, okay, now's the moment. Pick up that phone. And 99% of the time that somebody's on the other end ready to answer. You know, so it's that instinct. It's that you use your senses, if you will, to know your timing. There's a reason for green lights, yellow lights, and red lights.
Yeah.
Traffic control in the universe. So, you know, it's timing is everything. So,
all right. If anybody would like a card to be pulled for you, please speak up now or forever hold your peace. And otherwise, we're going to pull one more card and then probably wrap it up.
This is number 2 in the wild card suit and then some. I like this card.
I'm glad you pulled that one. Gosh, that's been on my mind all evening.
You know, has it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and actually, your words haunt me a lot. I'll have you know, Dr. Kelly. I can be doing my own business, and then I hear Doug Kelly's thing in my head, then some. Oh,
that's,
man.
That's just for the record, those are not my words. I keep threatening to look up and remember who spoke them, but they're not mine. But go ahead.
Well, just the same, you were the one who banged it into my head. When you have reached your limits and believe you have done all that you can do, reach deep within to stretch your true potential. Do a little more than what's needed and go beyond what's required to make a positive difference. You can do it. By doing so, you're leaving the woodpile a little higher than you found it. You know, and to be honest, I have honestly always lived my life a little bit like that. However, learning new skills, taking it that extra, you know, distance, a little more research, a little extra kindness, saying thank you twice, you know, all those little things where we take it, that, you know, stretch ourselves that little bit further. We can take it right back to where we started in this whole conversation tonight about reinvention is and what you believe. It's take it a little further. Ask another question, a different question. Dare to ask somebody who's outside your circle if you want to know something. You know, it's like take it that little bit of an extra distance.
You know, if employees would just remember that, they would make themselves fireproof assets to the company. If whatever you're doing, if you just add a little more and then some, when you're dealing with people, be just a little bit more friendly, you know, a little bit more of a smile. Whatever it is you're doing, if you're going to do a nice for somebody, do it just a little nicer, you know, whatever. Just remember that and then some. If you're writing something, if you're writing an assignment, if you're a student, and then some, just put yourself into it. That's one thing we really look at is in the assignments, in the essay questions. I want to know, what did you learn from this? How did it help you? You know, I want to see who you are as a student, as a human being, not just a student, as a human being. I want to see who you are. And that's why we don't allow copying and pasting from the study material. And we get that occasionally, even though we say don't. You know, and when I read something that's been copied and pasted, all it tells me is the student knows where to find it. They know how to copy and paste. And I am reminded of what a great writer I am. I'm looking for who that person is as a human being. That's what I'm looking for. That's what is the most important thing to me. So remember that and then some.
You know, Tracy B. has written in the chat, she always feels better about herself when she's helping or healing someone else. She says, I always have my caregiver on. And, you know, Tracy, that's, first of all, I want to say it gives us a sense of value when we know that we can help others, when we can extend ourselves in some way to help or be an ally, or be a force of some kind. But I would like to add in here for everyone, not just Tracy, there's a difference between being a caregiver and a caretaker. And the distinction is simple. When you're giving care, you're offering it when somebody, number one, has asked. Number two, when you see a need that nobody else is there to step up. And number three, in a way, are compassionate. You know, when you ask somebody, what can I do for you? So that's giving. When you're taking care, you know, when it means that you're in some ways deciding what is good for other people, you know, and you have decided what they need. And that is acting selfishly, because we're taking everyone else's opportunities away to be who they are and to be a free will. And I understand a lot of people don't, they're still learning some life skills, if you will, learning how to be in healthier relationships, understanding communications. And it takes a lot. You know, we're kind of, although this should all come pretty natural to us, we're debriefing ourselves and in some ways about our belief systems about what is giving care. Even something as simple as that, we believe that that's right. You know, that's what my mother did. That's what my father did. That's what, you know, that's the way I was raised. Well, is it healthy? See, and again, redefining our belief systems and looking at words and what they actually mean and really scrutinize how it is that we are with other people. So we have value. We will feel a fulfillment of our value by stepping up in a way that is healthy, and but never lose who you are. You know, Dr. Norman Wilson just wrote in there in the chat, there is a danger in being just a caregiver. There may be the tendency to become a them-esteemed individual. Absolutely. That's absolutely true. You can only give away what you have without losing a part of yourself. And, you know, I've always said that people who try to take away other people's pain are equally able to take away other people's love and joy. And that is really important to think about. So, you know, and even you take other things away from other people, it's a control thing, which is them esteem. You're measuring your importance by how you are, you know, giving to other people. So, yeah, and Tracy just mentioned in there, she's been, you know, worked with patients in physical rehab. So, sure. And that's a natural, that's because that's your job. You go in and you're the specialist, and that's why they come to you. But when it does extend too far beyond patients, you have to be a little bit cautious. So, again, caregiver versus caretaker is that really delicate line. So never give yourself away.
Tracy wants a card, and then we'll wrap it up.
Absolutely, Tracy. Glad to see you here tonight. Thanks for joining us. Well, you got boundaries.
That's funny.
Yeah, Tracy. Oh, you're so delightful, Tracy. Honestly, you are. Because you're going through your own reinvention. It's very exciting to watch and to be a part of that, I must say. It's always a privilege to be a part of people's changes and transformations. So boundaries. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it's necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. We were just talking. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me? You know, I own me. I'm the boss of me. I decide. I have control. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, and stay within that, you know, the self-acceptance, respect for free will, self-responsibility equals self-completeness. That's, of course, our life leadership paragon. And it's very exciting. It's, I think, really appropriate. So glad you're here every week with us, Tracy. Thanks very much. And all Dr. Right. Norman.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Shirley's been here tonight. Dr. Soon-to-be Dr. Shauna. Very exciting to see you here.
Yes, and we appreciate everyone taking time to join us tonight, whether you're listening to the live program or the archives. We do appreciate it, and let others know about it if you found value here. And next week we'll be back with a similar program, talking about new things. And if you have a question that you'd like to have us discuss, then just email it to me at admin@icmhchurch.org. You can find contact info on metaphysicalhumanism.org. If you'd like to know more about metaphysical humanism, go there, metaphysicalhumanism.org. I'd also like to thank Michael Kelly for producing the show. Thanks to Dr. Hunter, of course, as always. And I think that's about all I've got to offer. So until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night.